Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fuck Minister Fullers? There's an oldie. How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. You all right? What's happening? I'm all right. I'm recording this on a Sunday afternoon. It's a little, actually before noon. I just woke up not too long ago. I've been having a hard time sleeping. Have you guys? Like, I don't know, like, have I talked about this before? I think it's an age thing. It's also an end of the world thing. But I'm not really having insomnia at night. Like, I can get to sleep, but no matter what time I go to sleep, I wake up at like 6:30, like on the dot within a minute sometimes, 6:30. I can't track it. I don't know what the hell that's about. And I know some of you are saying like, oh, poor guy. I get up for work at 5. Yeah, I get it. But like if I go to bed at 2 or 3 because I'm sitting there and I've just done 3 sets of comedy at the Comedy Store and I come home, I don't know what to do with myself. And I just spin around for 3 hours because I'm jacked up on, I don't even know if it's the buzz of the stage, just back and forth. I don't know what it is. I mean, my theory, and I believe I've speculated before, is that because people say that when you get older, this happens. That there are things that happen when you get older. You get shorter, things begin to ache, apparently. Though I'm not having much of that. Things start breaking down. You have to decide what it is you can accept or not accept. Like, my big toes are fucked up. I don't know. What am I going to do about it? Well, like, yeah, because I imagine if I go somewhere if I go to the big toe doctor, that they want to cut my toes open and fuck with my joints. And then I could quote unquote, recovering for God knows how long, because I've got these weird bone spurs or bunions or whatever the fuck they are. And the truth is, if I wear the right shoes, they don't hurt that much. And if I wear the wrong shoes, they're fucking terrible. But, you know, how much time do I got left? I'm going to live with that one. But the idea that you need less sleep as you get older is, I think, fundamentally some part of you knows that maybe you're running out of time. And that, you know, you're up, and it's sort of your body's way or the God's way of saying, hey, you may not want to be up, but, you know, the time is limited, man. So sit there and realize that, or get up and do something. Right? Lil Rel Howery is on the show. That's there's so many ways that name is hard for me to say because I have problems with my L's and W-E's. Lil Rel Howery is here. He's a great comedian. He's got a movie coming out. It's called Uncle Drew. It's coming out this Friday, June 29th. I was happy to talk to him. So thank you all for the support and for donating to the Texas Raices for the immigration clusterfuck. Me and the Glow Girls did a little public service PSA that we posted on Instagram. We all sent little pieces, and Betty Gilpin put something together in support of services that can help out. And on we go. Do not surrender to the attempt at a collective Stockholm syndroming of the country. Don't become a brainwashed dummy. Try to think critically. Try not to be overwhelmed by the never-ending chaotic shitstorm of randomly fascistic, confusing bullshit. Some very scary stuff coming at us. But, you know, try to, again, it's hard to separate. You know, how do you go on, you know, if you're of a certain ilk, you know, how do you go on just living your life when things are seemingly coming unraveled? Well, you gotta enjoy some stuff. You gotta focus on things, and you know where you take that focus is up to you. Hopefully on proactive stuff, but it's sort of funny. I get emails sometimes, and I just wonder if it's like, is this this guy's way of being, or is it a reaction? I just got this email. Subject line: items on desk. Mark, let me start by saying thank you. I've listened to every episode, and the last time I emailed you was 5+ years ago when I referenced my concern regarding my own WTF-related completionist autism, a term Patton Oswalt had used on an episode. I also met you after a show in Houston when my dad kept telling you in a manner that was embarrassing but well-intentioned, my son is your number one fan. This induced a mild panic attack, causing me to get tongue-tied and mumble something like, I've listened to all the episodes. You were very kind at this time, signing my poster, We Good. Anyway, my reason for writing is the result of a thought that occurred during the Holly Hunter episode when she became briefly fixated on all the different tchotchkes on your desk. I'd never really given it much thought before and can only remember a few specifics related to these items, like you having to get rid of some when Obama came, and also Jennifer Lawrence playing with multiple items. To the point, I was thinking that it would be interesting to see a breakdown of which item was picked by which guests. With this data, the possibilities are endless. Are there correlations based on things like race, gender, age, or personality type? I'm not asking you to undergo this project. I did consider that Brendan may be interested in devoting some time to this kind of venture. At the very least, you could send out the following tweet. Hey, folks, if you've ever been a guest in my garage, I was wondering if you remember which of the items on my desk you tended to play with during the interview. As a refresher, here are the items you had to choose from: hammer, stress ball, etc. Thank you once again for all the joy, high quality content, and everything else you've given me over the years, Jonathan. Jonathan, dude, thanks for the email. It's not going to happen. And I would like to hear more about what you think. Like, you think that we can make columns and maybe do some sort of spreadsheet based on, you know, which of the 4 or 5 things on my desk and what it implies about race, gender, age. You know, you really took it out there. You took this out there, and I appreciate the input. And you're welcome to do it just from the information you have of people talking about it. I think that'd be a very small pool for the science of it. But good. Thank you for that. He's busy, you know, Jonathan. I don't want to mock him. He is a fan, and clearly he has a brain that does this. But wow, right? So Lil Rel Howery is here, and I love talking to him. I thought I'd met him before, but I had not, and it was great. We talked Chicago. We talked about comedy, and his new movie, Uncle Drew, which is in theaters everywhere this Friday, June 29th, is coming out. And this is me talking to Lil Rel Howery. Enjoy. Do you live out here now? How long have you lived out here?
Only 3 years.
Oh, 3?
Yeah.
From Chicago you came?
Yep. Well, I'm from Chicago, but I lived in New York for 2 years, and then I came here once Carmichael's show happened.
Oh, yeah. Was it a good experience doing the network thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing it again now. I just did a pilot with Fox called Real.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, me and Gerard producing and writing it together.
Oh, really?
Wrote it together, yeah. It's really good, but network is so, it's like, I've done stuff from an acting standpoint for the network, so to be a producer and have to deal with a lot of the little small stuff is a little annoying.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
So you did it for Fox?
Yeah.
What was the pitch? What's the angle? What's the show?
It's based on my life. It's just a version of it where I'm not a comedian. Mm-hmm. Instead of a comedian, I made myself a nurse.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that one. I haven't seen a male nurse trip.
No, me neither. That's what made me want to do it.
Yeah.
But it's if anybody's ever seen my specials or heard any of my stand-up, it's basically my life. I mean, it's me right after my ex-wife left with the kids, and me trying to figure out, you know, trying to figure this long-distance dad thing out. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's literally based on what happened to me for real. The difference is I was a comedian, actor instead of a male nurse.
And you were making it the narrative of your stuff.
Yeah, it's really, I get to play more than one character, which was fun.
Oh, really?
Live studio audience.
How do you get to play more than one character?
I mean, it's the way I wrote it. So
it's a twist?
Yeah, it was not a twist. It's just I like shows like Martin. I like, you know, I'm a big fan of Eddie Murphy. So just to do that type of stuff. I play a pastor also, but you won't know. Most of the people didn't know it when we tested it to people. They didn't know it was me. It was really good.
You had the makeup gone?
Prosthetics and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Full on prosthetics?
Yeah.
What? Like what?
I did like the cheeks, the chin. I made everything grayer. Had a bald cap. I did everything. I look totally different. I just look like an aged pastor. It's very fun. It's so funny, but it was fun.
Yeah.
There's going to be more characters I would introduce, enough to knock on wood, if the show's picked up.
You like doing that stuff?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I never did a lot of characters, but I mean, there's a certain style to that. I mean, like Eddie will do like a dozen sometimes. And that you just liked that when you were a kid? You were like,
I thought that was comedy. I this is stand-up. This is cool. So that's why I love it.
But it's different putting the whole get-up on.
Yeah, well, that's why, like, the Lucas Brothers, I know you talked to them before.
I love those guys.
We did a show called Friends of the People on True TV, which was like a sketch show.
Yeah.
And that was fun. Well, I got a chance to play a bunch of characters on that show.
And you just liked it.
I've always wanted to do it. That was always the plan, is to eventually do that.
Do you do characters in the stand-up?
Yeah. So, anybody ever seen my special, like...
The one that Kevin produced?
Yeah, every story I tell, I'm acting out everybody.
Right.
So I'm acting out my dad, I'm acting out my mom, I'm acting out...
Oh, so it was right there.
It's just what it is.
Yeah. That's a real skill, because you can really tell stories like that.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy is who... Because you hear people say who their influences are, and then people are like, Eddie Murphy, my influence, and then you watch they stand up, like, where? But with he really influenced me, like, just those stories, like, Richard did the same thing also, just... telling stories and acting the stories out.
Yeah, like I've heard it called peopling the stage, which I always like, that you create a cast of characters.
Yeah.
And you just move through it. And you can do whatever you like. As long as those characters are defined, you can be as funny as you want to be in that character.
It's a cheat code, too. It's like, a lot of times, I have a bunch of new material, but all I'm doing is putting the characters in different situations. So where people end up liking these characters, I put them in different scenarios.
Oh, yeah. You just move them around.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Well, you were so good in that movie, man, that Get Out movie.
I appreciate that.
Well, you were the punchline of the whole thing. You were the tag.
I was the tag, man. I was the voice of the people.
You guys did a couple endings?
Yeah, we did. The original ending is way darker than me.
No relief.
No relief. It was just sad.
Like, yeah.
I remember the first cut I saw of the movie was with the original ending, and I couldn't sleep.
So the original ending, no one is saved.
Nah, he goes to jail. And I go to the jail to try to get information out of him
to help him out.
But he was just like, he just owned it. Like, yo, come on, bro. You know they're not going to let me out of here.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's very dark.
Yeah, and what do you think made them change it? Was there a discussion?
Jordan changed it, I think, based on what we already see every day.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we already see this every day.
But that was the way he wrote it.
That's the way he wrote it. But he felt like we needed a hero.
Yeah.
And I thought it was brilliant to come up with a hero that was just a friend. I didn't do any, I didn't kill nobody. I just picked him up.
Yeah. It was perfect. But your character was always in there.
Yeah.
All the way through.
I thought that was the brilliant thing about what he wrote. I don't know how many times we've seen from the beginning of the movie, my character says, hey man, I don't think you should be doing it from the beginning.
Right, yeah.
From the jump. So I thought that Jordan's really smart, man.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful to be a part of that amazing, cool movie.
Yeah, I was sort of surprised by it because I'm not, you know, I don't go see horror movies. Mm-hmm. It's not my trip. I mean, I've seen them before in my life, but like everybody was talking about that movie and it was really, you know, I thought you were hilarious, and thank God there was that comic relief at the end. It would have been a nightmare. No, it would have been a whole different experience for that movie.
It would have been a different experience.
Well, that's interesting, because I wonder if Jordan was thinking that was satisfying, like, he was being real, and that was the way he saw it, with that kind of weird, heavy-hearted, horrible. That's a real horror movie at the end there.
Yeah.
If he let him just sit in jail. But then, what a great turn of events, man, for everybody involved.
I mean... when I think about it, even as us talking about it now, like because we reshot the ending like a month before the movie came out.
It held for that long.
Yeah.
So he went out and tested that thing.
Yeah.
with that old ending.
People were just angry though. Like they loved the movie, but they was leaving angry. And it would have been a whole different shift if we'd have kept that like that.
Oh man, when you saw those lights come on coming down the road, you were just picking them up. That must have been. How long did it take you to shoot that thing?
The movie.
Yeah.
Jordan said this. Now for me, I shot everything in a week.
Yeah.
Right. A week and one day. I did the movie on my hiatus week of Carmichael show.
Oh, okay.
All movies work like that, where I could just have a week.
Sure. Yeah.
You shoot everything.
Yeah, shoot it all out.
But it only took them 28 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you going to work with him again?
I hope so. Now we all so busy.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to work with him again. But like, I mean, he told me once he saw the first cut of Get Out, he gave me a call and was like, all right, get ready, brother. You're about to go on a ride.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right.
Really?
Yeah, right after that, the movie offers. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened literally the day after that movie came out. That's when people just started offering me stuff. I didn't really audition anymore.
Oh, really? For like what?
Like Uncle Drew that comes out.
What is that movie about? They didn't send me a screener. I didn't get to watch it.
It's with me and Kyrie Irving and Shaq and all those guys. Kyrie had those commercials he did with Pepsi where he played the old guy that played ball real well.
Right, right.
So the movie's based on my character who puts together this team. I lose my star player, my team, to my rival, this rival dude I've been rivaling with, which is Nick Crow, for a while. And so I spent all my money. I lost my team, but I still need a team. So one of the guys at the barbershop, which is JB Smooth, suggested I go find Uncle Drew. And I end up like seeing him by chance at a playground. And he has all these older friends that we help recruit to bring us all together to play in this tournament.
Oh, so it's a heartwarming thing.
It's heartwarming and funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're the lead.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Who directed it?
Charles Stone.
Uh-huh.
Who did Paid in Full. He did, that's my favorite movie. He's a what's up guy. He the one that created that.
Oh, he did?
That's crazy, though.
So, Chicago, I've been going to the city more, you know, like I've grown to love Chicago just because it's a real place. It's its own trip. But like, what generation of cast did you come out with? You're younger than Hannibal and those guys, right?
No, I'm older than Hannibal. So, I met Hannibal when he was in college. He opened for me when he was in college.
So you were like a Chicago mainstay.
I'm in between the old and the new. It's a very weird line with me.
Like me, but you're younger than me.
I'm 38.
Oh, you're much younger than me.
So it's like,
who's the old? Who are we talking?
Like the veterans for me was like Deion Cole.
Oh, okay.
Guys like that, D-Ray Davis, Corey Holcomb.
D-Ray Davis.
All those guys. And then like,
So Deion was an older guy?
Yeah, Deion was a part of I was opening for him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
When did you start? Like, where were you growing up?
West side of Chicago is where I'm from, which is like near the United Center and all that good stuff. I used to ride my bikes. You know, my friends used to ride our bikes to Chicago Stadium just to watch Mike drive off. He'll almost kill us because he just pull off in his car. He just drives so fast off. But
when you were a kid,
We just used to watch like the players leave the stadium.
Oh, that's
stuff that was fun.
In fancy cars.
Yeah.
And so, like, was it a difficult neighborhood? Was it like what was it? What was the situation?
I mean, I grew up. I guess it's almost cliche to say it, but I mean, I grew up in a hood pretty much. But I grew up with both my parents in that situation. Like my dad and mom were like very hands-on in our community. So my dad used to fix everybody's bikes. My dad, like, coached the baseball teams, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My mom volunteered all the time. It was a time I was embarrassed that they were so involved. Like, Jesus Christ, why y'all can't be like everybody else not come here all the time? But they were very involved.
What were their jobs?
So my dad was, both of them were CNAs, actually.
Which is?
Certified Nurses Assistant.
Oh, so you grew up with the nurse thing.
But my mom worked at my grammar school too at one point. Like she, like the first time they ever let kids to the school, that like these two little boys was like they had HIV. And they paid her well. She took the job. But like I've been thinking about like a lot of weird stuff lately, like, oh, that did happen, where like, you know, early on I learned like to not judge people because of that. It's such a weird kid lesson to have so early, because people were so scared. That's when it was kind of fresh and nobody knew, like, you can't be around or do they that room. Or,
and your mom's job was to what?
Just to take care of them.
HIV kids.
Yeah, she was a teacher's assistant. So she used to like take them home and
make sure no one bullied them.
Bothered them, yeah. Because they were not just, besides the disease, they were, you know, handicapped also. So,
oh wow,
she took care of him and that defended kinda him. But it changed the way I saw everything. Like I just see everything differently. I think just doing your research and understanding stuff
because of your mother's actions also, and not to be afraid.
Yeah. And I used to catch it sometimes because of that. Like people be like, "Hey man, oh your mom would like, come on, fam." Like I've learned to outsmart bullies that way. Like, yo, you're an idiot. Why don't you do your research? You know what I mean? Like, right. These are kids. Yeah. Like, I was a kid that was like, that wasn't afraid of like,
yeah.
I don't know. I got some weird confidence because of all that when she did that. But that's what she taught us though. And I always appreciate her for even taking that job. And she had that job until they both ended up passing really young.
Oh, really?
And that's when they stopped the program or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, so she was like a pioneer and no one wanted to do the gig?
Yeah.
That's sad. But I guess that's really what having that engagement with the community is about, is to instill confidence and fearlessness and not judge people.
That's what made me love the arts so much. That's why like when it almost goes back to why I like to do characters in my story. Like I love people so much, and I thought that was the first to love those two kids. It was like almost like brothers to me, you know what I'm saying?
So you knew them really well?
Yeah, we like their family became our family. Me and my brother, like it was very interesting. I thought about this the other day. It's like you almost forget about little sections of your life.
And what else was wrong with them other than the HIV?
I forget, it was a muscle disease too. I can't.
Oh, both of them?
Yeah, both of them
had it.
Yeah. And one had it worse than the other one. You know what I mean? Like Clarence had it really. Clarence was the first one to pass. He's always in a wheelchair. And then Timothy, you know, he had it and got sick. It was very.
How old were you?
Like 8 or 9.
And they just became almost like part members of your family.
Yep.
And their parents too?
Yep. They became, my mom was doing stuff on the week, right? She didn't have to do certain stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you had to deal with all that with the death and the disease.
But it was like, it just made me respect my mom. She just liked taking care of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was dope. Like, yo, she actually really cared about like people, and it makes me. That's why I care. I love people.
Sure. And what, you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got two. Had two brothers. I feel like I got a sad story. But my middle brother passed away from cancer in 2013.
Oh, sorry, man.
So yeah.
So you got one brother.
One brother left. My youngest brother, who's probably been my muse.
Oh
he
yeah.
He still is actually. I just call him and we just randomly talk about. Could we talk sports all the time?
Yeah.
It's like literally our phone calls sound like we have a podcast. Just diving into the games, you know what I mean?
You got to have somebody you gel with because that's where the new ideas come from.
He's been like that since like the first time I ever went on stage. And
yeah.
I got booed at this spot.
It's you did?
Yes, golly. Oh. And we listened to the tape. He was the person I listened to the tape with. He was like, so you going to do this again? Like, I guess so.
Was he in the room too or no?
No, I just, because I had a tape, so I taped the taped the show,
sure,
and I brought it home and let him listen to it with me. He was just like,
it's brutal.
It's brutal.
Oh man,
you want to try this again next week?
Like, how old's that guy?
My brother's 30, what's he, 34 now? 34.
What's his business?
So which is so funny in the show Rail,
the new show
it's based on my brother when he first got out of jail.
Yeah.
My brother went to jail for a year, and I want to tell that story because, you know, first people are like, oh, that's cliche to make the black dude come out of jail for something.
But the weird thing is people say that stuff and a lot of times it's like it happened.
Yes, that's why I'm like, yo, this is actually what happened.
I was thinking about that the other day, where it's sort of like, just because a public person or a creative person or a comedian, you know, tells a story that seems like it's a stereotype, it's not their responsibility to change their life story to accommodate, you know, like people,
man.
Being, it's not political correct. It's just sort of like, you know, the reason why some things everyone knows about is because they fucking happen.
You preaching to the damn choir. I swear to you. That's I thought it was, because, you know, they had a test group and I watched the test group, watched the show.
Yeah.
And one of the things we don't like, the stereotype. I'm like, no, but it fucking happened to them.
Yeah.
This is what happened. I'm not like. Yeah. Coming up with this, like, this is what happened.
Right, if you get rid of stereotypes, it doesn't solve the problem. What do you mean? Like, so let's find a more interesting story that is unique and weird, but completely contrived and has no bearing on reality.
So that happened to him, and I watched him.
Why'd he go to jail?
Man, being around the wrong cats at the wrong time.
Right.
And in Chicago, they tend to lock everybody up, even if one person is the drug dealer. But if you're in that car,
that's what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he went to jail for a year. But, I mean, this is why I wanted to tell this story on the show. And this is what I was trying to, you know, even tell the network. Like, you're going to see the I saw the progression of him. Like, it was, like, he's engaged. He has a great job.
Yeah.
He has a baby. He's just a smart, like, I saw him. You know what I mean? Because at first, me and my middle brother, before he passed, we felt terrible. We was like, yo, is it our fault? Because did we just focus on ourselves and let him run around with these cats? You know what I'm saying? Like,
felt guilty.
So when he got out, we were both really hands-on with him and make sure he got his shit together.
As opposed to go the wrong way.
Yeah.
Was that, you think it was a possibility?
He could have, but I think that's a great thing about family, man. Like, and that's once again, we felt bad because we were just, I know I was focused on my own shit. Like, once I left the house, I was just focused on comedy. That was just what it was. I was on the road. I was doing all this shit. I lived with two other comedians. That's just what it was.
Yep.
But I didn't realize, damn, I wasn't paying attention to, you know, this is the youngest, right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to look out for him.
Right.
But when he came out, you know, like, hands-on with him. I had him, like, coming to all my shows with me and shit, just to see a cool...
Right.
Just see some dope shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just take him out with me.
Make him feel part of something.
Part of something.
Did that prison fuck with his head?
I think it did at first. It made him real... He didn't trust anybody. But the great thing about it, when he went to... Like, one of my homies was there, too. So it was somebody looking out for him, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good.
But at the same time, like, it took us really, like, really molding and... And just when I think about it now, like, he's dope as fuck.
Well, just being supportive and you know, being there when he's got questions and stuff. That's great, man.
And I put all that in the show, but it was so weird for people. Like, that's stereotype. Like, it's not a fucking stereotype. Like, and also, I wanted to show a guy from that situation clean up.
Yeah.
How's a stereotype that it happens every fucking day?
Right.
It's a jail full of people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'll tell you, the test audience even felt like we wasn't hard enough on him when he got out. And I thought that was insane, too, because I'm like, oh, first of all, if somebody been in jail for a year, or whatever time, we ain't gonna come out like, motherfucker, look at you fucking bum. Like, they already caught it. They was in jail.
Yeah, and he's your brother.
You come out, you're gonna love on him.
Yeah.
I thought that was, I'm like, who are these people?
Who were those people?
Random people they picked to watch shit.
What do you think it was? Because, like, it seems to me that those kind of questions are coming out of some sort of, white guilt, right?
Crazy part was black people.
Yeah.
It was brothers in there, like, because that's not realistic that they just were supportive when he got out of jail. I'm like, what?
Maybe not your family.
Like, that's what I thought was crazy. Like, they throw parties for people when they go into jail.
Yeah.
Where I'm from.
Yeah.
So they can feel good because they go into jail.
Yeah. I wonder what that is. I guess it's like, you know, I guess the weird thing is that for people who it's not their experience, they, you know, they think it's some sort of stereotype just because it's not their life.
It's not their life. And that's funny. I don't look at somebody that grew up in the suburbs or I don't know. Like, tell me what your experience is. I can't guess this shit. I'm an asshole. I'm just going to guess your life. And I think that's fun. I think that's what's going to be fun about my show, Knock on Wood, if they pick it up, which I don't say this about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It looks really good. It's really funny. I'm very proud of it.
Who's the other supporting cast?
Sinbad plays my dad. Yeah, and
he's something else.
He's hysterical.
Yeah, nonstop, man.
He is. And you know what's dope about Sinbad? Like, even when he wasn't in scenes, he would just hang out on set, man.
Oh, sure.
I'm like, man, that was good, man. I like it, man. Real, I'm telling you, man, you're doing it, man.
He likes to put on a show, too.
He was hysterical.
Yeah.
He was always on. He always had a story. Like, I heard some amazing stories. It's so funny. The funniest story he told was, so it's a video where James Brown was in concert and Michael Jackson and Prince. I don't know if you ever see the video at the concert. Mm-hmm. He brings Michael Jackson on stage. Michael Jackson kill it. Then Michael Jackson whispers in his ear that he brings Prince on stage. Just a great video. First of all, I could tell, like, James Brown didn't know who Prince was because he's like, Prince?
Yeah.
Prince? He's like, calling his name. Prince? Prince? Prince?
Yeah.
So Prince is on somebody's shoulders walking through the crowd.
Yeah.
And a guy puts him on stage.
He's a little guy.
So this is the story, right? So I've seen this video a million times. I get joy from watching. Like, man, that's so cool. All of us at the concert hanging out, like, supporting each other. And somebody like, nah, Michael and Prince didn't like each other. I said, what? I said, no, man, they didn't like each other. that night, that concert, and he described, I was like, wait, the video I seen? Like, yeah, man, Michael Jackson tried to hit Prince with his car. Like, what?
Hit him with his car?
Yeah, he tried to, it's like these people, yeah, man, he's trying to run each other all the time, man.
Oh, man.
It's crazy, they didn't like each other at all. So Michael Jackson brought him up because he knew Prince was drunk.
Oh, right. He ruined your nice video for you. He ruined the brotherhood.
It makes it funnier. Yeah, now. Yeah. Like, oh, look at this.
Well, Sinbad's seen it all. He's been around a long time.
He's a legend, man. I think we forget that, too.
I do. I think he's a guy that doesn't get the credit he deserves.
He doesn't.
Because he delivers the goods, like, all the time, still. And he riffs like crazy. He'll just go out there with nothing.
That's why I wanted him on the show. Like, I wanted to...
Did he improvise a lot? Did you let him?
Yeah, we let him do him.
Yeah. Who plays your mom?
Well, I'm sticking to real life, so my mom has passed away in this. But it is an episode I want to do that, because he talks about it. My dad in the show talks about, you know, things been different since our mom has been gone or whatever.
Yeah.
So it is an episode idea where I do want to do this flashback episode of just...
Oh, yeah.
And
the
just
family.
Let Sinbad just show his chops. You know what I'm saying? I think it'll be fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so, because I want to.
Who plays the brother?
My brother's Jordan L. Jones, this young guy.
Mm.
Kind of no name.
Actor?
Really. Yeah, actor. I think he started to do comedy. So funny.
Yeah.
Like, I watched every audition tape. I watched everybody.
Yeah, like, you got to.
Some people don't. I realize a lot of people don't watch.
Oh, they watch who the casting director brings them.
I watch everybody.
It's wild. It gets a little painful sometimes.
Well, you know, I think from being on the other side of it, I actually enjoy it. Like,
you want to give them a chance.
If I have friends who just have shows, they want me to come watch audition tapes with them, I'll do it. Like, I like watching audition. Yeah. I like watching what choices somebody makes.
Sure.
Like,
that's
a crazy choice. Why would you do that?
Like, right. Yeah, and it's weird. Sometimes people on tape are different than when you meet them, too.
Exactly. I mean, it's happened a couple times. Like, with Jordan, I knew he was my brother.
Yeah.
And I think me and Gerard was at dinner, and I didn't even listen to his audition. I just saw his mannerism. I'm like, oh, this is my little brother. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just do it.
Yeah.
And then when I watched him, like, oh, yeah, this is him. And then my best friend, which is, I don't know, I can say this. So one of my best friends is Tiffany Haddish. Right?
Yeah.
That's like, for real.
For real, in your life?
Yeah.
Did she start in Chicago?
Nah.
Oh.
I met her. We did a show called Bill Bellamy's Who Got Jokes.
Bill Bellamy.
On TV1.
Yeah.
And she won her episode in LA, so they flew the winners from the other cities to Chicago to see our episode.
Yeah.
And I won my episode in Chicago, and I'm backstage, and I'm about to go to the dressing room or wherever, and I hear somebody say, that part, hey, boy, come here. I'm like, who's that? We gonna be friends. We gonna like, who the hell are you, lady? You know what I mean? We gonna be friends. You are so funny.
We're gonna be friends.
And that's, we came
friends. And you're still friends.
Yeah, that's been my friend since then. I put that, I don't see a lot of platonic friendships on TV. Where they always
with men and women?
Because it usually end up where they together and all that shit. I wanted to show just a friendship, and that's just what it is.
Yeah.
And which is what we did a good job of writing and putting in the show, and it's
played
by it's a comedian named Jess Hilarious. Like, she became like, she got like 4 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah,
that's how I found her. Like, I was following her on Instagram, thought she was fucking hysterical. She's like, she got something called Jess with the Mess, where she just goes in on celebrities and she's fucking hysterical.
And that's her real name.
Yeah, Jessica.
Okay.
So, but Jess Hilarious is what she's.
That's her. That's what she goes as.
But she
is she going to be listed as that in the credits?
I think we put her first name with Jess Hilarious and her last name.
Okay. All right.
But she is hysterical, and she was like, the network gave me a fight for both of them because they both were green.
Right.
She would say. But she played everything really to any actress I saw. And I saw some really great actresses out here, and. She played it. I had to fire somebody. That was tough.
Yeah.
At the table read. It was like, oh, what? We doing that? Like, that was the most, that was the EP thing where I wasn't.
An actor?
Yeah.
That you cast as her
first? The first version of that.
It's tough, man, right?
And it was, you know, you're in this meeting with the execs and they tell you all this great shit and other little notes. And they're like, oh, yeah, so we have to get rid of her. I'm like, wait. They did it to her last year, which is crazy. The actress.
The same actress?
After the table read, yes, fired. And I was like, I stopped the meeting like, okay, y'all, y'all know y'all did this last year, right?
Yeah.
Huh? It's just quiet in the room. Like, because this is my, first of all, it was my first time as an EPL's up, so I'm just like, I'm green in the room. I'm like, okay, let's stop this.
Yeah.
So y'all want to fire her again Jesus Christ. I'm like, this is mean. This is I'm the only one to think that.
Yeah, acting's a tough racket. Aren't you glad you're a comic too?
Yeah. It's like Gerard loves, he loves being a producer. He's like a evil genius. You know what I mean? He just loves all of it. Like, you know, but.
So what, how are you guys, you're not running the show though, are you?
Our showrunner is Mike Scully.
How do I know that guy?
He writes on The Simpsons.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
He did Carmichael's show with us. He's really dope. And we just got a good group, like Josh Rabinowitz and Kevin Barnett, who I did Friends of the People with.
Right.
The Luca Brothers.
Yeah.
They're writers and producers also on the show. So it was just friends.
How many people in the writing room?
Just us.
The first show. Yeah. So you haven't really made a room yet.
No, I actually started meeting writers, which is always weird. Like I'm taking meetings for something that might not happen. Like it's kind of.
Right.
It's kind of awkward.
Show business. You know what I mean? You know, you got to do it. Get it. You know, you might as well do it.
So I got to meet. I say, just in case I get a show. Let's
talk. Yeah. Yeah. If things are looking good and we really like your stuff, I'll let you know. But in terms of acting, though, did you train at all?
Nah.
See, some people are just naturals. You know what I mean?
It is just it. And it's from like when I was a little kid, I did like the plays and stuff.
What do you mean?
Like, I did plays in grammar school.
Uh-huh.
Like, I made the high school play. I was, like, in seventh grade. I wouldn't audition for...
So you were always into it?
Yeah.
You knew early on that you loved being on stage.
I knew this. I wrote a show called Name Your Adventure. They used to come on NBC.
Yeah.
It was hosted by Mario Lopez. It was only on... Maybe, they only show, like, six episodes, but I was in it.
Yeah?
And I wrote this show, like, yo, I want my adventure is to be on The Living Color.
Yeah.
And they wrote me back like the show was canceled. Sorry. Good luck, kid. You'll figure it out. Your dreams will come true. You know, whatever they tell a kid. It's like, What? The show's canceled? I just saw an episode a minute ago.
Which show was it?
Name Your Adventure.
And what was that about?
It was on NBC. They just like, just grant kids adventures. So you'll write them
in. You want to be on Living Color?
So, yeah, that was my adventure.
Weren't you part of a reboot?
I was. That's what made it full circle.
So they were
telekeening.
Yeah, you should write those producers and say, you know what? It did work out, but they didn't pick it up. Dream came true.
I told Keenan that the first day. I was like, hey, man, you probably ain't going to believe me, but I wrote a show called Name Your Adventure. I feel like I was the only kid watching it. Because like, it was, every time I bring it up, like, nobody else.
No, I never heard
of
it.
It was a song, Name Your Adventure. It was like a whole song and everything.
Was it on NBC? Was it on a long time?
No, it just one season.
That's why no one watched it.
But I thought it was amazing. I'm like, wow, this is cool.
What was the angle on the Living Color reboot? I mean, what happened there?
Wouldn't
it was Keenan.
Keenan Ivory Wayans is still the man.
Yeah.
When we first got it probably could be a short film just what happened.
Yeah.
But when we first got casted, the new cast, we were supposed to do sketches with the original cast, too.
Wow, that's a lot of weigh-ins.
It was going to be fun. But they were still there.
Yeah.
So, Jim Carrey, everybody was coming back.
Really?
But from what I heard, Fox was paying them next to nothing. Like, I think they was paying these superstars, like, really nothing.
Like, David Alan Greer.
David Oliver, Jim Carrey, Damon Wayans, Sean, everybody was coming back.
Wow.
And Damon was the first one, like, nah, forget this. And everybody just followed his lead. So I remember the first day of shooting, I'm excited. We've been looking at these scripts all week.
Yeah.
I show up, and like, David's packing all the stuff. I was like, where you going, David? Yeah, not doing it. And he just left. I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
When we found out, like, wait, they all left? So now it's panic around the set. And like, I had to learn sketches on the spot. So they was like sliding scripts under the door. Like, hey, you in this sketch? You're like, what?
So they were rewriting the whole show the day of?
Yeah.
And how many did you shoot?
How many sketches we shot?
You didn't even make a whole show?
No, I think we made a pilot. Oh. That's what we did. And
so all those cats left the day of?
The day of. Yeah.
Whoa, man. See, that's a kick in the ass by show business.
But it was
business.
Still fun, though. I can't even lie to you. Keenan Ivory Wayans, it was like everything happened for a reason to me, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean? And I became a better actor and all that because of that.
And
I got a chance to talk to him. Like, I used to sit with Keenan for lunch. And the first few times, he's looking at me like, dude, you can sit. You don't want to sit somewhere else?
Yeah.
I'm like, nope. I don't know if I ever had this moment again, brother. And then he started just telling these cool stories, man. And that
he's
was
a
fun.
Smart guy. I haven't seen him in a long time. Was he just telling you about the old days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love hearing those. I'm that guy. Like, I'm sitting.
Oh, yeah.
You tell me stories all day. I listen to it. I love hearing just great stories about stuff.
Yeah.
So you remember when they did the tour a couple of years ago, like they was on tour. It was Sean, Marlon, Damon, and Keenan.
Oh, I didn't realize.
So I went to see the show. I think I went to the one in Jersey.
Yeah.
And such a funny story with that too. But I went to the show. Well, when Olivic, the reboot didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
I ended up doing an interview and somebody like took what I said out of place. That they said I blamed Damon Wayans as the reason why it didn't get picked up. I didn't say that, but that's what they twisted.
Sure.
That was the first time I learned that can happen. Like, oh, damn, you got to watch what you say because somebody could just twist that
shit.
And I felt so terrible. I remember that day I felt drastically bad. And I remember like
about being set up.
Yeah. And I told Keenan, I'm sorry, man. Keenan said, don't worry about it. I remember I was on the road. I set my hotel room in the dark. Like I felt terrible.
Like you
man.
Fucked up.
Yeah. Cause it went like viral for a second. I'm like, oh shit. I didn't.
That's the worst. And you're alone on the hotel room.
I'm like tearing up. Like, yo, I didn't ruin my. I destroyed
my life.
Yeah.
The Wayans are going to hate me. The Wayans army.
But Keenan, that's what he explained to me. Like, bro, ain't a big deal. You know, they have misconstrued. That's why you got to watch what information you give and how you say it and all that shit. And so anyway, I go backstage.
Yeah. And Damon, after he told
and
you.
And Damon was like, this is a wild, but I didn't think they talked to each other. I don't know what the fuck I thought.
Yeah.
So Damon was like, what the fuck did you say again? And walked up on me and I'm like, I'm about to fight this, like the way he did it. So now I'm a little nervous because Damon ain't a little guy. I'm like, fuck.
Tall guy.
And he just hugged me. They all started fucking laughing. I was like, I mean, fuck yeah, right? I was like, do y'all know how stressful I was about that whole thing?
He knew. He obviously knew.
That's why I love that family, man. They're really dope. And they all are so talented, man.
I used to love watching Damon.
He's brilliant, man.
He's so good. Like, you know, he'd do characters, he'd stay in them a real long time, and, like, it was just wild to watch him. Didn't give a fuck.
I saw him that night, and I remember leaving, calling comics, like, yo, ain't nobody, none of us better than this motherfucker.
Right.
He's the man.
Yeah, and it's people don't know him as that.
That's what's so interesting. I don't know if it needs to be another documentary done.
How can we save these guys' reputation as comics
when
they don't do it anymore?
I wouldn't mind doing something just focused on the storytellers and the character work comics.
Right. Yeah.
And just focus on that.
Yeah.
Because doing this, like, I remember when I did Last Comic Standing, and that was one of the reasons why I was eliminated. They said my set felt like it was sketchy, like I was doing a sketch because I was in character.
I fucking hate when people do that because that is what stand up was.
Yes.
Like the great guys, you know, the guys who could tell stories, the guys who did voices, they all did voices. Even Lenny Bruce did fucking voices, you know, like did characters. You know, Pryor, the old Cosby. You know, the original Cosby stuff. Yeah. I mean, like, they were all doing characters.
Yeah.
And that was what stand-up was. I don't like when people say, oh, you're a storyteller. It's like, no, I'm not a stand-up comic. That's the way it was. There were joke guys and there were story guys.
I didn't like the way they started separating what, and that's what, I hate to say that, that's what shows like that does.
Yeah.
They try to control what comedy is.
Yeah.
And comedy is so many different things. That's why, you hear about some people who like hate Dane Cook. It's so many styles of it. Like, it's no way to put a finger on it. This is the style you should. No, fam.
And there's so many comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many comics.
So, but no, but I, it's something that I get mad about it. Like when they say, Marin's a storyteller. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's what stand-up is.
That's what stand-up is.
Yeah. There are joke guys, but that you can't have everybody being joke guys. It'd just be annoying.
I can't do that to save my life.
I can't either. I mean, when I write a joke by accident, I'll do it and I'll be like, this is a great joke. And but I have to fight myself from announcing it. It's like, I don't write jokes like this.
Yeah.
But I did this one.
You know what I do is I usually put a joke in a story. Like
I make
the joke a story because I'm like, I can't just tell this joke.
Yeah, it's satisfying the first couple times, but then you're just sort of like wearing out, like you get bored with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because but I wrote this one joke and I'm like, this is why it feels so good. But guys who do jokes, they write 100 of those.
Yeah.
Am I going to do that? I'm like, no, I lucked into this one. I didn't write it. It just happened. So when did you start? How old were you when you started?
I always tell people it's almost two beginnings with comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Because you start probably while you're still working a job or in school, so you're not doing it regularly. I started 19 is the first time I went on stage.
Yeah.
But I was still going to, I was going to Harold Washington College and I was working. So I was only able to go once.
Yeah, what were you studying in college?
I don't have a real major. I just went because I didn't want to look like I wasn't doing shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I knew I wanted to do stand-up, but I didn't I didn't know how to figure... I had to figure out a way to let my family know this is what the fuck I was going to do. So I was like, let me go to Harold Washington College.
Yeah.
Where I don't have to have a... Because I had a college scholarship.
What kind of college you?
It was a Harold Washington College, a community college downtown Chicago. Okay, it was like a little small school. I didn't really...
2-year thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, I could major in math. I don't know.
just so they think you're doing something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? So I did that. But I was going up at the Lion's Den, which is where I started going up.
Yeah.
I went there.
I heard of that.
Yeah. On Monday nights, I almost got jumped leaving there one night.
Yeah.
From a Hispanic gang and shit. I used to wear my hat to the left.
What kind of place was it?
It was a small bar. I remember, you know how you first start, everything looks big? Like, oh, man, this place is big with a stage. You know?
And it was just a mic?
It was just an open mic. And I remember going back and watching, like, I thought this place was huge. This little tiny ass fucking place. This place was like the biggest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, because you're on stage.
Yeah.
So, of course, you're going to think it's huge.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of the places I started were huge because there was always so few people there.
But that's the thing, too. I think once you start doing it in front of strangers, like you don't even think about it.
Yeah.
It's just an audience to you. So it's almost like that little small spot is a theater to me.
Yeah. Isn't that weird, though? Like, you go up, I don't know if you did, but like, you go up for 9 people and be like, life or death, man.
Yeah.
For 9 fucking people. You'd be your whole, you just hang your whole sense of yourself on these fucking people just sitting there, one guy by himself, a 3 top, and then the 4 people in back, and you're like, oh, fuck, man.
I gotta give it to him.
Yeah, I got it. This better go good, man.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's so. It's so funny, like, because I started then, and then...
What kind of open mic was it? Just
an open mic. It used to be, like, 20 people go up. Like, It was, like, crazy.
Yeah.
And that was fun, and then...
Where were you working?
I worked at TTC. It was a telemarketing company.
Oh.
We sold, like, all those, you know, calling old people, like, hey, you want the bill, the vitamins, you know, the pills and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just so nothing. Just
below, all that stuff. Yeah.
Soul-killing job. Yeah. But you didn't give a shit.
No, I needed the money.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you married then?
Nah.
Not yet? Oh.
I didn't get married until I was 28. Wow. So I was like, by the time I met my wife, I, like, started kind of, in Chicago, because this is what I did. This was my plan, right? Yeah. I was like, I went to Jamie Foxx's Laugh for Loser one year, and Jamie Foxx used to do this festival, Laughapalooza, in Atlanta. And I went to one of those symposiums or whatever, panels or whatever you call them. And his manager was like, yo, the smartest thing you could do is be the man of your city first and then try to venture out.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I, like, really hustled. Like, D-Ray, you know, I used to see, D-Ray had a club, Riddles Comedy Club.
Riddles.
Yeah, on Sunday nights, which was, like, everybody used to come there, like, Kanye, everybody used to, it was like the
that
shit.
That was the famous black comedy club.
Yeah, Riddles,
in Chicago.
Sunday night, Riddles
Club. I think I talked to, didn't they make a documentary about it?
Oh, no, you're talking about All Jokes Aside. That's a different club, but like, Riddles was the first, it was just dope as fuck. Like, they was buying bottles of champagne. That's how crazy it was. So D-Ray made a killing from that. Like, he
used to do a night there?
He did a night, just Sunday nights, 300 seats. He got the door, and he used to sell out. We'll do like 2 or 3 shows sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And that's how he started?
That's not how he started, but I think that's what helped him pay for his way to come out.
He's
a Chicago guy.
Yeah.
That's the first person I saw really, like, Damon Williams is somebody who we call the godfather there, who's another Chicago person, but D-Ray was the first one I've ever saw hustle it and make money for real, like, how to do it like that.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I guess this is, I want to do it. It's like, he figured out how to make, he sold comedy like it was drugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, yo, this is brilliant. Like, even the way party promoters, the way they promoted in Chicago, the style came from D-Ray. D-Ray was like passing out flyers of people who was going on, going to work at the train, going to the club, like doing that himself. I used to go with him. You know, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
But anyway, I used to
You were opening for him?
I used to seat every Sunday.
Yeah.
I used to seat the people to get 5 minutes every Sunday. And all the comics thought I was degrading myself by doing that shit and all this other thing. But I'm like,
you were what for doing it?
Degrading. Like just it's not degrading, just seating people.
Oh,
like,
degrading. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, no, I want to go up every week at the hottest spot. I will seat people. And he gives me $50. Yeah.
I was the doorman at the Comedy Store. What are you going to do? You're around the shit. You get your time. You know what I mean?
But people don't, it's all fun because some people care about it. image of like looking like they're somebody.
When you're nothing?
When you're nothing. And yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any difference.
I thought it
either.
Made people nicer to me because I would seat them and speak to them. So when I went up, they was like, oh, it's the guy that sat us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, make a good impression when they see it, when you see where that. But did you get tips and shit?
Man, I ain't get no tips. But I had so much fun doing that. And eventually I ended up hosting when D-Ray moved to LA.
So that was your regular gig. Sunday nights, you'd seat the people, you give you $50, you get 5 minutes, and just, it was just you two, or there was a whole bunch of people?
No, it's a whole show.
Yeah.
It was like Chicago, like comics on the road used to be so afraid because all the Chicago comics would come up there to destroy
Who are the guys?
You got people like Leon Rogers and Corey Holcomb and Damon Williams and B. Cole. It's so many comics from that Comic View, Def Jam world that was just fucking hitting at the time. But then we'll have people like Tony Roberts and Cat Williams. And he brought Rudy Ray Moore there, Dolemite.
Yeah. Oh, who Cat did?
No, D-Ray. Oh, D-Ray, because D-Ray booked it too.
He brought Dolemite?
Dolemite was at Riddle's Comedy. And let me tell you, I opened for Dolemite. Had a fun time. Great set.
You did or
couldn't,
he did?
I did. Yeah. Couldn't wait to meet him, right?
Yeah.
He was nice to me in the lobby because I bought like a couple DVDs too.
Yeah.
Go on stage and shit on all of us for not having our own theme song.
For your own theme song?
He's like, these motherfuckers ain't comedians? You don't even got your own goddamn song. I'm like, what?
Was he funny?
He was just shitting on us for 15. I don't even really remember. I just remember him like shitting on us about not doing comedy right.
Were people happy to see him?
They were.
Yeah.
Because he did it. First of all, his intro was long as fuck. Because he got his own song.
Yeah.
he had the cape on his shit. He had the cane.
Old school bullshit.
It was Dolemite, man.
So you're doing this every Sunday with D-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and you get to see everybody. See, that's the thing that people don't realize about working the door and doing those kind of things in a bigger venue, is then you get to study all the dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You get to watch Cat Williams in a small club. That must have been great.
J.B. Smoove was... for the longest, I had a tape of him because I taped myself that night, but I just kept it on.
Yeah. So
just
funny.
It's one of the, like, to me, one of the funniest people I've ever seen live that ever made me, like, you could hear me cough laughing. I got sick from laughing. He's just so funny. Like, the way he milks a joke, it's just like.
He's got that weird way of talking.
Like, come on, man. You got to do it like this. God damn, man. If you're big, you gotta do big shit. You know, but he was the first headliner that was like extremely nice to me.
Yeah.
I remember I hung out with him one night. He let me hang out with him and shit. Like, shit, J.B. Smoove let me party with him. We went out. And it was just fun. He kept asking women for cheese. It was fucking weird, but it was just fucking hysterical. I just laughed like, you got some cheese, baby?
Yeah.
She's like, what? Some cheese?
He's a weird dude.
It's fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
So... the buses stopped running and I couldn't get home. She's like, man, you can sleep on the floor, man. and I remember people talking like, man, you know, I'm trying to get it, man. I'm trying to get it. You know what I mean?
He lived in Chicago?
No. So he ended up meeting his wife, who's like, this is so crazy. Like, he's from New York.
Yeah, because that's where I thought he started.
But he used to come to Chicago. D-Ray loved bringing him to Riddles. Like, Riddles, we love JB motherfucking Smoove.
Yeah.
And so, oh God, like, that's what's so funny about certain cities that get certain type of comedy in a way. Chicago loves that shit.
Yeah.
When you could tell stories, when you could fucking do characters, like, they fucking...
Yeah.
He was milking shit,
man. It's a show.
It's a show.
Yeah.
And comics, what I used to love about it, when JB came to town, all of us were there.
Oh, yeah?
All of us were there.
He had a real following.
It was all the comics back there fucking dying.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that, about him.
Man, it's all that. Like, that's what's so funny. Like,
because, like, in New York, he was just another dude in New York.
That's so funny you say that. Like, the way I talk about him sometimes, like, to New York cats, they be like, I mean, JB's cool. I'm like, what? Motherfucker, he's a legend. You know what I mean? Like, I love that. Like, I learned how to milk a joke because of that guy.
Sure. Yeah.
Where you just don't stop.
Yeah, you just keep pushing.
Man, that shit.
That's a good skill. It's one that I never, like, I just started in the last few years trying to do, to just keep pushing it.
It's such
If you can find that wave and stay on it.
Well, that's funny, too. Being a comedy fan, I remember watching an old tape of myself, and I'm watching myself kind of sound like J.B. Smoove. Like, God,
sure,
it.
Of course.
Because I was young. I didn't know the fuck I was.
Yeah.
And I'm cracking up like, what the fuck was I doing? But it's so funny, once you figure out you.
Yeah, it goes away.
It goes away.
Yeah.
You still got the skill set, but it goes away.
It's so common.
Yeah. People are scared to talk about that sometimes. Like, yo, we start because of who we love. So you tend to sound like them at first.
And you don't know how to do it, and you don't do it on purpose.
No.
You just like, you know, it just it's a way to get, you just borrow the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Is really, I think, is what it really comes down to. Is it's almost innate. You're going to absorb your hero's confidence.
Yeah.
And like for a while there was like a bunch of Attells in New York. There was there was Hedbergs everywhere for a while, right?
Oh God, yeah.
And then there, it's just like you can just see it ripple through the community, and then cats grow out of it.
They grow out of it.
So what was the big break when you just started, after doing that, when did you start headlining around Chicago?
Fast, really. I mean, like, Riddles, I just got good fast. And when I started hosting Riddles, that's when it started to be even better.
Because you get to go back up every time.
Go back every time.
Is that when you start working the characters?
Well, but then I started going, I hosted this open mic that was like not even comedy. It was like rappers, fucking singers, poets. And just me, like, freestyling and roasting and impersonating, doing all this shit, it gave me so much freedom to play around and insane confidence. Like, I became this crazy little spot that was just a Masonic hall, you know.
And you made the open mic?
No, this dope dealer I knew. He was a promoter.
Yeah.
And, and it was fun.
And because it wasn't comedy, you could fucking experiment.
You could just play, yo.
Yeah, yeah.
You could play with music. You could do so much shit. So that, like, once, by the time all that happened, then Mary Lindsay came and opened Jokes and Notes Comedy Club up. And that's when my career trajectory is like, all right, everything started changing. When she opened that club up, I remember I featured for another comic. And after I featured, she said, you can't feature for nobody no more.
Who was that?
You can only headline.
Who'd you feature?
I'm not going to say.
What, you gave him a run for his money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah.
She's like,
you're not going to, you can't feature no more. You're headlining here for the now.
Like, yeah, because like, even if you're holding back, you know, like that feature spot's sweet. You know, that's what you get some payback for that eventually. If you blow a headliner off, it'll come back around at some point.
But you know what's funny? Like, I like when somebody kills in front of me.
Yeah.
I like kill, please, because it makes, I have to be better then. I can't walk in like, that's what's so weird when you do hear about headliners who ask for certain features, like they know who the shitty features, like, yeah, it's perfect, this guy does it. Or if you're a black comic, hey, give me a white comic. I don't want no other black comic on the show, so I can have the only black opinion.
I just like guys to do what they do. You know, I don't want them to do what I do, but I want them to do what they do and then do it well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's, you know, I remember joking with Hannibal, because Hannibal, it's so funny, because Hannibal, like I said, I first met him when he was in college, and he opened for me. He kind of bummed. But he was funny as fuck to me. I'm like, yo, you're fucking hysterical. I bought him a drink at the after party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's how we became cool, actually.
Well, it's so funny, because when he started, he was different.
And then this switch, like, I would literally watch this dude go from that to, like, a star.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, can I open for you? That's why I tell people, like, you it's good to be nice to everybody. You don't know who gonna be.
Right. And also, people get funnier. Like, he was one of those dudes, when I saw him when he was first coming around, the alternative room was the only, like, and he was a black dude that was, like, the black dude at the alt-white shows.
Yeah.
Like, he was that guy. Right?
Yeah.
And I watched him, and I was like, you know, it's good, it's thoughtful, he's smart. But then at some point, it's just like something clicked.
Something clicked, yeah.
Right? And then he's coming out with a fucking shiny suit on, doing everything.
I mean, he
got music.
He became that guy. I love the fact that he stayed true to himself. I mean, as a comedian, we don't pick our audiences, for real. We don't know who the fuck will be fans.
That's right.
Of us. We really don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm proud of that dude, and it was so funny. It was funny watching the switch happen, where, like, I remember I was at the Just for Last Festival, and I was doing New Faces Unwrap, and I didn't like my set because I don't feel like they laughed that hard. I just left. I went up and left the venue. And Hannah was telling, like, where the fuck did you go? I was like, hey man, I left, man. I fucking bummed. I was like, no, you did great. So then wasn't nobody laughing, like, no, because it's all fucking execs here writing shit down. They all looking for you.
Yeah.
I'm like, for real?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I left. I'm at a party with Russell Peters. I thought I ate it, but it was it's just funny watching that dynamic of it. But it's even more fascinating when it turns back around. So, like, me and Hannibal, for no reason, go to the Essence Festival the last 2 years, just last minute call, like, yo, let's just go to Essence Festival. Like, all right, cool. And I remember we went 1 year, and, you know, Hannibal walking around, people, oh, Hannibal Buress, like, look, you know. Then we went last year, this is after Get Out came out. I couldn't go no far. It was to the point he turned into my security.
He helped you out?
Yeah, because I couldn't fucking go. And I've never had that before. And I didn't think straight about, like, oh, I can't just walk around.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck am I doing? Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you're getting a lot of attention.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, once you take one picture, it's like,
oh, yeah, then they converge. Yeah.
And but it was funny watching that. And it, like, just watching us be at this cool place where, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, all right, man, I think we stars now or something, right, brother? Cool, right?
Nice. That's nice. And you're both good guys, and it doesn't seem like, you know, because I think some people become a certain type of star where they just leave everybody behind and you don't know them anymore.
Yeah.
I've seen that a couple times.
It's a good group of us that are friends, man. I mean, I look at the Lucas brothers. I look at Jermaine Fowler. I look at Gerard. I look at
Tiffany.
Tiffany. It's just everybody's cool.
Yeah. Those are good people.
And doing well. Like, you know, yeah. Yeah. So jokes and notes happen, right? Jokes and notes happen. She gives me Wednesday night there, which was just a regular open mic. But I'm like, yo, I'm finna make this crazy, though. So I'm like.
And you knew the skills.
I knew how to promote it. Yeah. I was giving away. I made like a comedy CD to give away.
Yeah.
So I would go to regular clubs. See, I never understood why comedians promote at other comedy shows.
Yeah.
Like, go to an audience that's not here. Like, yeah, so I used to go to clubs.
Yeah.
And, like, it'd be a car full of girls. I'm like, I'm funny. I'm telling you. Uh-huh, we'll see. Here's my, listen to the CD on your way home.
Yeah.
I was that confident because it was funny shit. And, like, it started being line. I had a line around the building every Wednesday. Mostly women.
Uh-huh.
Mostly women.
That's who you're handing the shit out to?
Yo, that's what I, because I think, I always thought if you have more women there, that's going to make the dudes come.
Yeah.
And that's when the dudes started coming and, like the dope boys would come out. It was funny, me, I actually, when I think about this, it makes me laugh. I got a chance to like mold people into comedy fans.
Right. Yeah.
Like people that had never been to comedy shows. Yeah. Like I taught them how to act at comedy shows. It's so very interesting.
Yeah.
When I talk to these cats now, especially some of my homies and some street guys.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers like comedy judges now. Like his set was good. I mean, he could have. Like, who the fuck are you now? Like, you remember I had to roast you for fucking talking too much? You know what I mean? Like, so it's funny watching that. Like, oh yeah, I got a chance to mold a crowd. And,
yeah.
But it became a thing. I mean, we had an after party. This is what. You people forgot it was an open mic.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was just a big
people
night out.
People were scared to go out at my shop. Like, new comics were like, I don't want to go up. This is a real crowd. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But it was every week I was freestyling, and my chops got better. Like, I was just, like, my special, like, I look at the special I did with Kevin Hart produced. Like, I didn't work on it. It was just like, I just did the best of what I did.
Right. That's what you were doing.
They're like, I remember my agent manager, like, you don't want to go on the road to work on the set? I'm like, nope, I got it. Kevin, like, come on, man, you need it. Nah, nope. Just do it.
Yeah.
I promise you.
It came out great, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, because you just know it. And, you know, that was.
How'd Kevin Hart get involved?
Well, you know, I wanted to be, it was more of a strategic thing on my part, but I feel like I wanted to be introduced by
the world?
A veteran comedian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It thought that'd be fun. Like, because if I talked to Sid about it first, that's who I first talked to.
Who?
Sid the Entertainer.
Yeah.
And he was down, and then I mentioned it to Russell Peters or somebody else I was thinking about.
Yeah.
So, but my agent at the time was like, yo, Kevin would be great. I think Kevin would want to do it. I'm like, for real? Like, we talked to Kevin. Kevin's like, yeah, I'm in. I'm a big fan, you know?
Yeah.
And, but that's why I did it that way, just because, you know, it was just an introduction.
Interesting.
Man. Like, even like, I wouldn't, so funny, all the rest of the specials, Kevin like brought them out. He was in front. I was like, hey, nah, you come at the end of my shit, because I don't want you to be a distraction
to
people being excited about seeing you and then see, because it's my fucking night, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with him coming out the end and stamping it, oh,
it worked?
It was perfect.
Yeah.
It was fucking perfect.
And you saw a difference? It worked?
Big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Big difference. Oh, but that's just like me. I knew exactly what I wanted my special to be from, you know, I had my kids open up my special, because I saw Damon Wayans do that.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
Well, they 9 and 8. 9, 8, and 1. I got a 9, 8, and 1-year-old. But at the time, they were 4 or 5, something like that. They were really little. When I watch it now, I almost tear up on some dad shit because they were so little and funny. Yeah. But I did it because I saw Damon Wayans do that with his HBO special where he had little Damon. And like I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I want to do that. And
makes
I
you a person.
Yeah. It makes it. And then I didn't, because of Dolemite, I made an original song.
Yeah.
I made a song called Relevant, which is the name of the special. I had my friend record an original song for it. And it's so funny. That's what I thought about. When he said, I remember telling, like, damn, fuck that. But I'm like,
you don't have a song.
Maybe I should have a song.
And now you got one.
Now I got one. Now I got a song.
So what happened with the, you know, how, what happened with the personal life?
I mean, life is life. So I got married at 28. I met my ex-wife. She used to come to the comedy. She used to come to Jokes and Notes.
Yeah, for the Wednesdays?
Yep. And she was a regular, too, like a regular fan.
Mm-hmm.
And
married a fan.
But,
I did that.
You said I did
yeah,
that.
Yeah. It's a good way to lose a fan.
But she's but she was nice, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And if, at that time, I was looking to set. I was having a great time. Like, I'm hosting this hot open mic for the last few years. And I was smart, too. Some dudes would have probably banged every chick. Yeah. I didn't do that. It was almost like my jokes was a stripper. Like, I sold sexy through my comedy. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like they all were there like, fine motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And sometimes I make myself like, how the fuck did I pull that off? But it helped me, though. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And anyway.
Made you strong.
Chicago made me feel like a star. So when I went to New York and LA, I felt like I was dope already.
Yeah, confidence.
I had so much confidence. Yeah, like, people used to ask me, why are you so confident? Like, because of Chicago.
Yeah.
You not nervous? Like, nah.
Yeah.
You got your dues. This is a place there that loves me. So, yes.
Yeah.
But I met her. The funny story is, I met her twice. The first time I met her, she went to Tennessee State University. And D-Ray, we used to do these colleges. And D-Ray used to send me out to the colleges early to promote the show.
Yeah.
So I'd be on somebody's campus for a week. It's almost like I was a student. Right? You know what I mean? Just walking around and shit, passing out flyers.
So you worked for D-Ray.
I basically did.
Yeah.
But because he gave me opportunity.
Is he still your friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still my big brother. Because I appreciate the I'm so glad I had to work for these opportunities.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It wasn't just about being. I learned.
I
learned the hustle of it. You know what I'm saying? And
so you're Tennessee?
I'm at Tennessee State. I go to the library. I see this beautiful girl.
Yeah.
Which was her.
Yeah.
I give her a flyer, flirt with her a little bit, and I just remember thinking, like, dang, I just had a feeling about her. I don't know.
Yeah.
Years later, I ain't seen her again. Let's go 5 years later, some shit, right? I do some black doctors thing in San Francisco and perform. They got like a black doctors union. I don't know what the fuck.
Corporate gig?
It wasn't even corporate because they all still students. They're like black medical students. Oh, okay. Some shit. Yeah. They were all doctors.
Yeah.
My manager at the time, Knowledge Beckham, which was my first manager, who was amazing, who big part of what everything, like that was basically my business partner, my big brother, but he was fucking great. He ended up hollering at one of the girls there. He's like, yo, when you're in Chicago, come to the, you know, Wednesday night. And she was friends with her and brought her. And when we first met again, I'm like, where the fuck do I know you from? And it took one of her friends to say, you don't remember meeting Rail at Tennessee State that he maybe tried to talk to you in the library? He's like, oh shit, that's you?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey.
Yeah.
And right away we hit it off. Like right away. Yeah. Right away it was like, I remember like so many chicks being jealous of her shit, like at the comedy club. Cause I was professing my love on stage. Like, hey, yeah, I'm happy now. Like, cause I talked about, when I was on the mic, I talked about whatever the fuck I had going on.
Sure. Yeah.
Good or bad. And that's what I was in. I mean, settle down. And it was like, but she was just dope. I mean, like, I would say this, and it's just more than telling the whole story. I think if we were older, things would have been different. I just don't think you should get married under 30.
Yeah?
Especially not if you're in this business and you're on this rise.
Sure,
just like.
So what stressed it out?
Stress life. I mean, like, when my mom passed, I went in a dark place, like in 09, right? And I was still doing, I remember like, doing dumb shit, and I had to weigh on her. Like, I was getting to fights in the club for no fucking reason.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I was hurting. I didn't fucking, and I had to, people don't realize, when you still have to do comedy for a living, this is how you pay your bills, how you raise your, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I didn't give myself time to mourn. I just went to perform. Like, it was like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't.
And then you try to work through it on stage, and you ain't ready yet.
Yeah, it's just a lot. It's just heavy. You don't know what to do with this energy of, and it depends on what the situation was. I was sad and I felt a lot of guilt, you know.
Why?
Well, my mom wrote a journal when she was sick, because it happened really fast. Like, she found out she had cancer, and then like 4 or 5 months later she passed.
Yeah.
She wrote in a journal, she was like, you know, And I remember one day I was in New Jersey and she was calling me and shit, and then I like ignored it. Like, I'm like, I'm getting ready for my show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when she left the journal, I read it and it was like, you know, she was saying how like I was always the one person she could talk to about anything, but she wouldn't call me because she felt like I was bothered. She felt like she was bothering me. And I felt terrible. Like, damn, I made you feel, I got so caught up in my.
Yeah.
Trying to make it shit.
Yeah.
That. Damn, like my mom, you felt like I was bothering you?
Yeah.
And I felt terrible about
it. And you read that after she died?
Yeah.
So that was...
That shit weighed on me.
Yeah, because there's nothing, you can't make it right except for yourself.
Sometimes I think, because I used to keep the last voicemail she left me. I think somebody erased that motherfucker, because I think they knew I kept listening to it. So after reading that, I just felt fucking bad. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, I was just, me and Jamie Foxx was actually talking about this last night. Because we was talking about Kanye, right? And, you know, most people are like, Kanye crazy, and this is where just pitch for, you know? And, like, I watched this interview, and I watched this TMZ thing, and I know what that looks like to be still hurting over some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that guy is still mourning.
His mom?
His mom. And not just mourning, it feels guilt about that shit.
Mm.
You know, and I know what that looks like. It was so scary. I'm like, oh, fuck. I just wasn't famous when it was happening to me.
Yeah.
I probably, if this happened to me like that, and out of it losing, like, people thought I was fucking crazy.
So that your regular personality starts to crack because you're hiding too much shit.
You create this weird ass bubble. You saying crazy shit. Like, it's so weird watching this happen because I'm like, it kind of made me go back to like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Because I remember having a conversation with my ex-wife and it'd be things I said to her that I don't even fucking remember.
Yeah, because you were in too much pain.
I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. Were you drinking or anything?
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
Not everything, but like drinking, just like I was, because I was, I didn't, even the fights, I wanted a motherfucker to hit me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, fucking hit me, please. Yeah. I was starting fights with people who would walk up to me and be like, hey, Rel, I'm a big fan. What you say, motherfucker? Like, and it's like, nigga, I said you big. And then you start fighting. Like, so.
You wanted to get punished.
I wanted to get punished. And it's so crazy, that type of mindset. That's why, I'm looking at this shit, and I'm like, oh, no, that dude, I don't agree with anything he's saying, but right. I know I don't know if he's trying to maneuver around dealing with that. That's what you do. You try to maneuver around dealing with it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something. One thing I love about comedy is, slowly but surely, that's what started helping me out that shit.
Comedy. Of course. What else have you got?
Comedy. When I started doing my mom on stage and telling these stories and this and that, because I'll black out in character sometimes. Like, when I'm in character, I'm fucking in it.
Yeah.
And it started making me remember conversations. I literally performed these conversations on stage.
Oh, wow. And did you feel you got closure?
I got closure from it. I mean, we all got our different ways of doing stuff. You know, me, I prayed about it.
And,
and I ended up having a dream where she just talked to me and told me everything was cool.
Let you go. Yeah, released you.
Yeah, you're good. What are you talking about?
Like, yeah. And also, you did the good thing with your little brother.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's paying it forward too, right?
Well, I mean, it's paying it forward, but it's also like, but that's why I feel, and I've been saying this, and I bring up Kanye again this last time, but it's like, that's why I wouldn't mind talking to him. Like, you need somebody to talk to? Like, not just about this shit, but like, fuck all that.
Yeah.
We know you're saying crazy, you got free spirit, free speech, all this, okay, fine. What's up, bro? Yeah. Like, what do you?
Yeah, does he have anybody like that
anymore? I don't think he does. There's no way this motherfucker could drive up to TMZ. Ain't nobody be like, hey, man, I don't think you should do that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Where's that money. Guy?
You could just do your own interview somewhere. Go talk to Mark Maron.
What
do some chill. Yeah. Don't go to fucking TMZ. Why you doing it live? The man drove up to the place, which is insane.
That's the other problem with him. He's a little insane.
Which I think that happens with that shit. If you don't deal with it, you lose your fucking, especially if you're creative too. We already have these.
Yeah. And at the level of fame he's at too, it's very isolating.
It's very isolating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I get that part of it. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I, you know.
Don't you have a way to get to him?
You know, it's funny. We do know the same fucking people.
Yeah.
And maybe soon it will happen. Because I keep thinking about it. Like, I really want to just talk to him. And like,
it feels like a lot of people have had enough. And there seems like he's got friends that they may say they're tired of it, but they'll show back up for him eventually.
But how do we have a? But this is what I hate about our fucking society, right? Yeah. We had enough of this rapper venting, and we let every politician or fucking news do what the fuck they want to do.
Yeah.
And we not up at arms about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane to me.
Well, yeah, because you feel powerless somehow.
Yeah. It's like, dude, we have a president that don't give a fuck.
It's a monster.
It's
a fucking disaster. It's a fucking disaster every day. But you don't. Did you feel like you can do anything about it? And I think that's the other thing that Kanye compounded it with. It's like, why are you going to start aligning yourself with this monster that we have no control over?
Yeah, it's.
He's in. But I see what you're saying though. Now I see you feel that self-punishment drive.
Yeah, yeah.
That there's grief there, and he feels guilty about something, so he's bringing it all down on himself.
And he's creating other stuff to distract it.
Uh huh.
That's why he's taking on all this
shit. But he's also making his fans and everybody that had any love for him, question him.
But that's why I think I feel like I'm different in a way when it's like, as far as heart goes, this guy inspired the fuck out of me. When a College Dropout album came out, just being from Chicago,
yeah,
I was like, yo, this dude made it. Yo, I can make it too. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because we saw Ye at the comedy club. We saw Ye made it, fam. Oh, shit. God, yeah. Ye's famous. Yeah. We all can get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've ever felt like that. And because of that, I'd like applaud him. I'd like love that dude for that.
Yeah.
So when I see somebody hurting that I felt like inspired me like that, I don't want to see nothing crazy happen to him because we're doing this shit.
Right, right.
Point. He's just talking shit.
Yeah.
He could say slavery didn't exist if he wanted to, but it don't change shit.
Yeah.
It happened.
Yeah.
So why are we just debating with this motherfucker that said something stupid?
Right, you just...
We forgot what we used to do to people that say shit stupid. Remember back in the day, people say something stupid, like, all right, this motherfucker's stupid.
Yeah.
And you didn't listen to it.
Right.
You didn't bring it back up. You're like, all right, that's
so you're
shit.
Saying you gotta look past it.
Just if you don't want to buy that man music or whatever the case may be, do that shit. Like all this, like I don't want to see somebody harm themselves that looks like they're hurting.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, hopefully, maybe you can get through to him, man.
I hope. I mean, we'll see. I keep bringing it. I brought it up twice already, but like I feel he's saying shit just like. Because I watched both interviews. The one with Charlamagne was really good. And you could see, I could see people's pain easily.
Yeah.
And I think people are upset because they don't know themselves too.
Yeah.
I'm a person, I know who the fuck I am. I've been through the worst of it. When people are constantly looking for heroes.
Yeah.
You making heroes out of people. And it's funny, ironically, me doing Get Out and Jordan making me a hero.
Yeah.
You start to understand. That's why people are so happy. Oh, my God. You're a hero.
Yeah.
All I did was pick him up.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, we're searching for heroes so fucking bad.
We want to be saved. Yeah.
Instead of you becoming a hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop looking for somebody else to do this shit. And I think that's where everybody be like, I'm so fucking hurt. He's hurting. He ain't hurt me. I mean, like... I'm more hurt that he looks like he's hurting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it happens to comedians. I mean, comedians have meltdowns. I think that's another thing. We've seen comics have meltdowns.
Yeah, not as much as we used to. It used to happen a lot. Back before cell phones could take pictures. There's always a dude losing his shit somewhere.
It still is, though. It's still like, you still, every once in a while, because I do keep a tight circle, but every once in a while, when you're just hanging out at the comic club, and you hear like the bitter conversations. Like,
offstage?
Oh, yeah, my God. Yeah, it's like, what the fuck? Like, sometimes when I go to Chicago and I hear comics say shit, like, see, now what you got to do is like, do y'all know y'all don't know what the fuck y'all talking about?
Well, we did it too, but you were working. There's always been that guy. That's nothing new.
Yeah, but that's why, I've always at least tried to keep myself around. I've always had a positive mindset about this shit.
Yeah.
And there's friends I still have in this business that I don't talk to as much anymore because they haven't changed their their mindset.
That's right, right. They're still morbid or morose or cynical or bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, but they must have people in their life that want to keep them that way.
I think so.
Yeah, because I was certainly more bitter, and I just needed to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, to open up the heart a little bit. How do you get along with your ex and your kids? You all right?
Well, yeah. So Brittany and Judah, which is my daughter's 9, my son is 8.
Yeah.
Me and Verena, we good. We co-parents. It ain't, nothing's ever perfect in this shit.
Yeah.
Especially when you start making money.
Right.
That's what makes things harder.
Sure,
like
always, yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
And then Harlem, the little one, 1-year-old, me and his mom, we're cool. I mean, he's trying to figure. It's such a weird situation, but he's such a beautiful kid.
You're not with her either?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I'm very single, guy.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet her, whoever this fuck this is, so I can stop all this shit and just chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because I would love to settle again. I don't. It's so funny, too, because you know your homeboy's like, man, if I was you, kid, I'll be out here like, fam, you're not me, okay? It's not that, it's not as easy as you think it is. It's out here just slinging your dick everywhere. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and also, that, where does that go? I mean, it's like there's always part of your brain that wants that because it feels good, it's exciting, you know, new people. But, like, where does it go?
Nowhere. goes nowhere.
It's like, I had to get real old to really realize that, but it's like drugs. It's like anything else. Yeah, it feels great, but you know, there's no free ride. They're gonna, you can't just go out there and do that and not be held accountable.
That's what's so interesting about being with somebody that gives you kind of peace in a way, right? Like, because not the more work I have to do now, like the more responsibility I have.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to come home and like kind of just talk to her about it. Like, this is what happened today. How was your day? You know what I mean? Like, just leave it at that. Right now, it's just like, it's so many different, I don't remember what.
Nothing, it's not grounded.
Yeah, it's
And there's it's all work.
It's all work.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep doing it no more, man. I'm like, it's so funny to get to that place now, but that's where I'm at with it. Like, I'm done, yo. I want to settle down. And I've been saying it more out loud lately so it can happen.
Maybe manifest it.
Manifest it, man. Because it's like, I've had my fun, man.
All right. Well, I'll keep, you said it here. maybe something will come and begin some weird mail.
It's so funny. Most of the women I date probably like, oh, fuck real. Because I meet some amazing women. Like, lately, I've met some great women. But to me, it's always something like, especially after I've been married before, so like.
Yeah, but it's always going to be something, dude.
I know, I'm glad you said it. So it has to be something that will make, it is something in me that, I need something that makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
Or makes me feel like I need to talk to you. And it's been one woman that's been close to that, but it's like.
What do you mean you need something that makes you feel bad?
Like if I'm in a situation where I'm on the road
and
a bunch of badass chicks come in and I don't think about you right away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on, man. You don't want to hurt her. Right. If I don't have that shit,
it's not going to work.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just not going
to
work. Like,
I need
to feel bad.
Like a guilty motherfucker. You got to feel the guilt right away.
Feel the guilt. Go in my room and FaceTime her.
Right, right. Hey,
What do I
stand to lose?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's great talking to you, buddy. I'm glad we did this.
Man, we talked about a lot.
We did. It was great. And continued success. And I'm excited about, I hope the new show goes. And I'm looking forward to seeing the movie.
Yeah, Uncle Drew, man. It's going to be
great. When's it out?
June 29th.
All right, man.
Thanks, man.
Okay, that was me and Lil Rel Howery. Very funny guy. Sweet guy. It's kind of cool to hear that history about the Chicago comedy scene. Kanye, and it was good. I enjoyed it. Vintage WTF posters are back in the swag store. Go to podswag.com/WTF or go to the merch page of WTFpod.com. We've got 5 posters up there, all signed by me, some of them limited edition. So there's that. I'm going to play a riff. All right. You know, like, even if you don't listen to the guitar part, and even if it annoys you, or even if it's like redundant, Brendan makes some files and uses them later. Yeah, so that happens despite you.